Jay, welcome to the podcast, Death by a Thousand Cuts. I'm Rob Higgins, and I'm hanging in here with my pal Dave Conway once again. Can't really seem to shake Dave.
Hello.
Seems to be making a bit of a fixture of himself. Welcome back, David.
Thank you.
And of course, a welcome back to our producer, Neva Chow. She was absent last week due to commitments, but Neva, welcome back, and a happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Neva.
It's Neva's birthday. We should embarrass her that way here and now. It is November 2nd. This is our third podcast. Thanks for tuning in and hanging out with us. Before we get anywhere, we have to make mention of appears to be currently the best trio in the game right now, and that's Ben, Sagan, and Klingberg. Of course, Ben and Sagan leading the league in points, but depending on how you go about your fantasy league, there's a good chance they might be occupying slots 1 and 2 there as well. And if you had the thought to grab Klingberg at your draft, if you were lucky enough to have Sagan and Ben, well, you would probably really be enjoying that scenario right now. And that might just be one of the better or bigger stories, really, of the year, because we all look at the preseason rankings as so vital a resource for us to prepare ourselves for our own drafts. For folks that do season-long drafts still, of course, daily fantasy is a thing now. But going into the season, how many people would have still taken Sidney Crosby ahead of a Jamie Benn or a Tyler Seguin?
I would have taken Seguin.
Neva, I'll ask you, would you have taken Jamie Benn over Sidney Crosby?
Not likely.
Not likely. Seguin, would you have taken Seguin over Crosby?
More than Ben.
But would you have taken, if they were both sitting there, let's say you had the second or third pick at your draft and they were both sitting there, you taken Crosby, you taken Seguin, not knowing what's gone on so far? Seguin?
I listened to your show.
Okay, so maybe you would. Well, on our show that once existed, I did say at the end of last season that I would not take Sidney Crosby first overall ever again, and that I would have taken Tyler Seguin to start this season number one overall. So that is true. And I do own Seguin in our league, and it's why I, in our league, traded both McKinnon and Drouin this summer for Jamie Benn, because I wanted them to play together. And then in our draft, I went out and took Klingberg. So yeah, I guess this trio is working out for me personally. It's not why I brought it up. It just seems to be. Anyways, moving on.
Moving on.
It has been fun following the game. We've been in Toronto, Neva and I. Dave has as well. All of us working away. We've been writing new music. We're going away in January to record a new record and getting pretty psyched for that, but it's been a lot of fun watching hockey and digging into our fantasy team. So onward we go. Another big story since we last convened here, the three of us, the Boston Bruins. Do you guys own any Bruins in your... All right, Neva doesn't want to talk about that sore spot. Okay, fine. David, do you own any Boston Bruins?
I have Louis.
Oh, you got Louis Erickson. Now, that's an interesting file, because there's some talk this week that maybe Louis would be shipped out of town. Is he a guy that they could afford to cut loose? I don't know. But he seems to be enjoying some success, as are the Boston Bruins. So you're in no hurry to cut Louis loose.
I am not.
If you will.
Louis stays.
Boston Bruins 5-0 on the road, 1-3-1 at home. 6-3-1 now. They are +8 as a team. They are playing some dominant hockey, too, if you put your eyes on the games. You know that since they got Chara back, specifically, this team has been dominant, especially on the power play, with the league's best power play at this point. And not only have they got that top unit rolling, but Chara and now the rookie Colin Miller seem to be anchoring a second power play unit that is really lighting it up, David. So the Boston Bruins on special teams getting it done. And at even strength as well. Of course, Krejci stealing the headlines in most leagues. We talked about him in the last couple of podcasts now already. But one person really didn't talk that much about is Brett Connolly. We touched on it. But again, since last Monday, continues to bury, continues to capitalize on the opportunity, and he got to play against Tampa Bay, the old team that cut him loose, Dave, and he served up a cold dish of revenge. Riding shotgun on a pretty good line, so don't sleep on the Brett Connolly file, and in our league, he's got a couple of positions in terms of eligibility, so that's a sneaky good pick. But the Boston Bruins, wow, talk about exceeding expectations. Do some cherry picking before we get into some bombage. Victor Rask, you guys been asking me all morning about Chris Versteeg. Well, let's talk about it. Victor Rask, I want to start there. He's got points in five of his last seven games. He put up three versus Tampa Bay, so that's going to get people's attention. But he is the number one center on the Carolina Hurricanes. So generally speaking, when we do fantasy leagues, the number one center on any team is going to be worth consideration. So let's consider him. He's playing on the top line with Staal and Versteeg. Rask and Versteeg combined have put up 18 points and lead the team in points. So Rask has got 4 goals and 27 shots. He's getting power play looks. Versteeg is playing in a top line context, something that maybe isn't the best fit for him, but is a great opportunity for him to rack up points. So I guess the long-winded answer to your question from earlier is, sure, I would take a chance on Versteeg if I had the dough. I mean, pretty much any top-line player that's getting it done is going to be worthy of consideration. Only you can decide if he is worthy of a spot on your team.
Yeah, I think he's pretty cheap for our league. 2.2.
The Columbus Blue Jackets, some signs of life anyways, but don't sleep on this one. Everyone, it's almost tiresome to continue talking about Cam Atkinson because we've had how many, oh, he's about to do this type conversations, and who knows if he's even capable, but right now, points in 4 of his last 5 games, 13 shots on goal. He's getting top line looks. He's now tied for the team lead in scoring with 7 points, which doesn't say much, but he's only getting paid $3.5 million, and we talked about this sort of earlier when I looked up at what he was getting paid and considered, well, that's not bad. You know, in our league, we sort of allot $4 million per slot on average, 3.5. That's not bad for a guy that's producing. But then I started looking at the whole team, and the Columbus Blue Jackets as a group are paid, man. Like, if you look at the core of that team, there's nobody fighting for their contract lives, really. The only guy that is truly playing for a new contract is Boone Jenner, and coincidentally, he seems to be burying at a pretty good clip. And if you read about how the team is performing, or if you do the eye test on the team, you see that he's really bringing it and seems to be standing out most recently on a game-to-game basis, David.
He is. I have his 2 line mates.
So, you know, you bring in Torts, it's a bit desperate. But it does speak to the situation, and perhaps we shouldn't ignore the fact that we're talking about a group of young millionaires, none of whom have any real future considerations to deal with
for years
in the short term. So, the Edmonton Oilers, 4-1 goal losses in a row to some pretty good teams. Now, people seem to be racing out there to pick up players like Darnell Nurse, who just arrived on the scene and had a pretty good goal. And Darnell Nurse, obviously referred to by Don Cherry as a player that's going to be, quote, a force in this league. So that's what Don had to say about that. And if you saw the goal, you know it was pretty impressive. But what I also noticed when it comes to the Edmonton Oilers and the defensive group is that not a lot of people are really paying attention to Oscar Klefbom. And since he was that -4 and that brutal game where really nobody showed up, they've been hanging tough with some good hockey clubs. And in those 4-1 goal losses, Oscar Klefbom, who does occupy a top power play unit spot with Taylor Hall on the blue line, at even strength he's playing with Davidson right now, who had a pretty good snipe the other night. But Clefbaum's got 3 points in those 4-1 goal losses. Plays big minutes for the club and also was a first-round pick. So a good run for Oscar Clefbaum. Don't sleep on that file if you're looking for some help on the blue line. Dano, there's been chatter about him potentially being called up. I mean, Chicago's using guys like Ryan Garbutt, guys like Anisimov, Panarin, especially with Hossa out. It's a bit more fluid, but Dano, will he get the call-up? He's got 7 points in 9 AHL games. He was taken 27th overall in 2013 by Columbus. It wouldn't surprise me, so, you know, if you're in one of those leagues where you can acquire a player like that, don't sleep on the Dano file. TJ Brody, let's talk a little eye test, David.
Let's.
Saw Calgary play the other night. He was best player on the ice. I've read that he was the best player on the ice when people reflected on that game. But using my own eyes, I can tell you he was the best player on the ice that night, in my view. And this is a player who's already got 2 points in 3 games. He had 41 points in 81 games last year. 11 goals, has been out. Returned, getting paired up with Russell to start. Second power play unit time with Hamilton to start. But this is a player that could be the straw that sort of stirs that drink in the right direction finally in Calgary, David.
It's not Dougie.
I know, right? Everyone was all about the Dougie Hamilton file this year. Not a lot of talk about TJ Brody. Yet he was the guy that had 11 goals and 40-plus points last year for Calgary. Not easy to do in this league. Also, if you want to look at it from an HFI perspective, which we will do today, we haven't done that yet on the podcast, but something that we've been doing in years past, it's a way that I've been using to classify, categorize, if you will, the population of the NHL to make peer groups in terms of what one can expect from a fantasy perspective on a per-game basis. It's a rate-based perspective, and TJ Brody has an HFI, a number. It's basically a number that weighs the entire stats pack, by the way, that gives you one number to reference, and I've been tracking it for nearly 15 years, I guess it is now. And TJ Brody has an HFI that has gone up 3 years prior to this one, so there is some clear trajectory from a fantasy perspective with this player in the context that he's been in, and there's very little reason to think that despite the addition of Dougie Hamilton that TJ Brody can't be viewed as a vital cog and quite potentially the best defenseman to have among that group this year despite the attention we pay to Giordano and Hamilton. The McDavid-Eichel comparisons, well, they've been going on for a long time. Let's look at it from a fantasy perspective. Eichel, 4 goals in 12 games, no assists, a couple of power play goals, 42 shots on goal. That's impressive. That is tied for 10th in the league with Zach Parise, with Falk, both of whom are monstrous shooters. The overall HFI, pretty dismal, 0.9. You need a 1.7 to make a winning fantasy roster, in my view. It's basically the most 1.7s wins. Connor McDavid, on the other hand, is a 1.7 through 12 games in about the top 60 to 70 range through that filter. 12 points in 12 games, 5 goals on 22 shots, also 2 power play goals. Tied for 9th overall in points with Ovechkin, Turris, Plex, Desharnais, Markov, Subban, a lot of Canadians there, and Johnny Hockey, Johnny Gaudreau. So Connor McDavid clearly crushing Eichel in the early going here from a fantasy perspective. I predicted at the end of last year, David, that Connor McDavid would be worth a first-round selection in your fantasy league, especially if it was a keeper league, obviously.
Yeah.
But I said that he would challenge for the scoring lead if, in fact, again, the scoring champion was to put up between 80 and 90 points. Last year, Ben only scored 87 points and won the title. If that's what's required to win the scoring title again this year, my theory was that McDavid would find a way to be a point-per-game player in this league in his first season. And through 12 games already, he had a slow start, but at the 12-game mark, he is just that. He's a point-per-game player. So if he is able to ramp up as this season goes on and reach and maintain a point-per-game pace, or exceed it, he could quite potentially be right there. Right now, it appears that guys like Ben and Sagan are on pace for like 115, 120 right. points. I don't know how realistic that pace is for them either, but at this point, there's no doubt about one thing, and that is McDavid is absolutely destroying Eichel. Speaking of destruction, let's get on to some bombs. Number one, you had this coming, Jake Voracek. Fuck you. Drop the hammer on Jake Voracek. Thank you. 44 shots. You want to know how ugly it is?
How
ugly. 44 shots on goal. That is tied for sixth with James Neal in the NHL. No goals. Not a single one. He's the only player, in fact, with 40 or more shots on goal to not bury a single time. Nazem Kadri buried once. He's a minus player. He's got one power play assist, and he's got three assists overall. An honorable mention to Nazem Kadri, by the way. 42 shots on goal. He only has buried once, so not that much better. But Voracek, a 1.7 HFI or more the last 3 years. In fact, he was a 2.0 last year, so the expectations were high for him going into this year. 22 or 23 goals in each of his last 3 years, despite only 48 games played in 2012-2013, have fed those expectations. And right now, like I said, we're looking at no goals, 3 points in 10 games played, one power play point, and David, he had 33 power play points last year. The Philadelphia Flyers had some lethal action going on the power play last year. Both Claude Giroux and Jake Voracek suck huge fucking donkey balls at this point in the season.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. I guess this takes us right back to Edmonton, and maybe I should have started there, but if you watch the Edmonton Oilers play recently, and that's been a lot of fun, following the club and seeing what's going to happen here with all this talent amassed, I couldn't help but notice how bad Andrej Sekera looked. Drop the hammer. Dude, David, they're paying this guy a cap hit of 5.5, that's 5.5. He just doesn't look very good. He does not look dominant. He does not look like a player that a team in their position should be paying that kind of dough to. I didn't understand the acquisition when it happened. I questioned it then, and now looking at it in the context of the club right now, it's just not happening for me. They had Jeff Petrie. He's making 5.5 in Montreal. They're doing well. He's doing well. But they didn't want to keep him around. But they bring in this guy to pay him $5.5 million. He had 44 points in 74 games with Carolina. He had 15 power play points that year as well in 2013-2014. But, David, in the 85 games since, he's got 27 points. And in the 106 games prior to that stretch of production, he had 25 points. He's never been the 1.4 HFI that we expect of a defenseman that's worthy of inclusion on a winning fantasy roster. But he was a 1.3 in that 2013-2014 season. He's got 4 points in 12 games so far. He's only got 2 power play points. Like I said, they're paying him a fortune. But I say boo. Yeah. Boo on the Sekera file. The whole thing stinks. All right, let's get into some more HFI talk. David, there were talks at the beginning of this season that the Toronto Maple Leafs were going to acquire Travis Zajac. And collectively, this whole city just shit its pants. And we're like, don't you dare trade anything away for Travis Zajac. We don't want or need a 6'3" centerman that can produce, that can score, can play in all situations. We'd rather have Tyler Bozak, Brad Boys, or whoever the hell else we've been subjected to this week. And by the way, if you've watched any of the games, it is atrocious. It is everything you want as a Leaf fan, because they are, their course is finely tuned to bring them directly to Austin Matthews, if that's what they're after. But they are a brutal hockey team to watch right now. And really, if you're watching it, you have to ask yourself, what the fuck am I doing, really?
Oh, it's brutal.
Did you watch any of it this week?
bits and pieces. That's about it.
Yeah,
I think
that's the temperature. People are like, I'll tune in to look. But anyways, Travis Zajac, the reason we're going there is because he's been really good. And wouldn't you know it, the Leaf fan base may be behind the curve on that. 7-10, 4 goals, 3 power play goals. He's got a 1.8 HFI thus far, on par with the 1.8 he has put up already. He did it in 2009, 2010. I said earlier, you need a 1.7 to be on a winning fantasy roster, so a 1.8 should be on your radar. He's the second power play center. He's the second line center at even strength with Palmieri riding shotgun there, so if you're looking for some duo action, and Palmieri's been productive. He's a 1.2 career average HFI Zajac. So what's going on right now is well above what he's averaged out for. But this is sort of a new environment in New Jersey, and it's a productive environment, David. They're winning hockey games. And as I said, he's playing in all situations for that club. So he is trusted. Don't sleep on Travis Zajac, on pace for a career best HFI. Speaking of career best HFIs, David, Ryan O'Reilly.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? Correct, David. The number one center at even strength for the Buffalo Sabres is just crushing shit. Playing the point on the second power play unit, that's useful. 13 points in 12 games, that's dominant. Tied for 7th with Kuznetsov, Stone, Hall. He's got 7 power play points already, David. 7. He only had 12 in all 82 games last year with Colorado, which, by the way, led to his 1.3 HFI last year. That is essentially, well, I don't know, about half of what he's rolling at right now. Ryan O'Reilly killing it at a 2.1 this year. Not quite half, but close. He is among the top 30-40 plays thus far, despite being in Buffalo, which many people would have stayed away from entirely just because of the toxicity there, the potential for some pain. He's only been a 1.7 HFI once in his entire career, David. It was in 13-14. He had 64 points in 80 games with Colorado. But he is now, at 24 years old, earning the big bucks, putting up the big boy points, Dave. Speaking of big boy points, isn't it nice to see Taylor Hall producing at the level that people have expected him to be at? It's hard to believe that he's only 23 years old. He's already had 3 seasons at 2.0 HFI or higher, which is sort of an elite territory for folks that don't know. If you're consistently a player that's putting up a 2.0 or more in this NHL, you can be considered an elite play. In my view, he has been that 3 times in his career. Actually, 3 times post-rookie season. Then he had that brutal 1.5 last year. Well, he's rocking a 2.5 this year. And at his age, you can expect him, essentially, especially with the curve that the Edmonton Oilers are on, to put up some prime time numbers. 13 points in 12 games, 5 goals, 4 power play points. He's a plus player. We're talking about a guy that is a minus 18 in his career, David. What he's doing right now is on par with Kuznetsov, on par with Tarasenko. And the 47 shots on goal Taylor has right now, do you know how high in the league that ranks him, David? 2nd in the NHL behind who? Don't look. I see you looking at my notes.
I'm not looking.
Stop cheating.
Yes, I am, but...
Who is Taylor Hall trailing with 47 shots on goal? I'll give you a clue. This isn't going to tell you much, but the guy with the most has 49, and he's eligible for 2 positions.
Does he play in Dallas?
No.
Okay.
He plays in the Western Conference. The 2 positions are defense and... wing.
Buffalo?
Nope.
Oh, Brent Burns.
There you go. Brent Burns. Would you be expecting Brent Burns, the guy that you so shamefully made fun of earlier? You weren't here for this, folks, but Dave was making fun of Brent Burns' appearance.
He said he makes you uncomfortable.
That's a terrible thing to say. It's a terrible thing to say about him. And if anybody has the best look, go compare Ryan Johansson's profile pic with Brent Burns. I know which dude I want to hang out with.
In a hockey context, I find it menacing. That's all. That's what I was getting at.
Is that what you were getting at?
That's what I was getting
at. Brent Burns, don't you dare ever change. You're like,
who wants to go in a corner with that guy with a beard like that? Nobody.
Nobody. But you, but you know when the game's over and you're hanging out later in the night, you know who you want to go hang out with.
Well, it's fine.
You know you can have a bunch.
I didn't talk. We did
a much better time rolling with Brent Burns than with Ryan Johansson. With all due respect, Ryan.
We didn't talk about the DFI.
What's that?
The after the DFI.
Ryan Johansson. How much you loving the Ryan Johansson file, Neva?
Negatory.
That was Neva's first pick in our draft. We're in a keeper league, so a bunch of the main players are already off the board. But Johansson was a pretty big point getter to be available in our league, and Neva chose him with her first round pick. So she's bitter.
Let's bomb that guy.
You want drop the hammer on Ryan Johansson
and Perry for that matter.
Oh, Corey Perry, drop the hammer on Corey Perry. We did that last week, but
yeah, well,
that's okay.
Still deserves it.
All for doing last week is, can you throw Abdicator in there? And we don't even have to talk about him.
Really?
Yeah. Seven games, no
Fine.
Points.
Fine. Drop the hammer on Justin Abdicator. All right. Let's continue on with some HFI stuff. David Krejci, how do we not talk about you? We've talked about it every week now because in our draft, in our league, I could not believe that he went undrafted. Drove me nuts. I wanted to take him at the end of our draft, but I had no money.
Well, everybody was scared.
What has he done? What has
Everything?
He done? He's got a 3.1 HFI. That is the best in the NHL, on par with Jamie Benn, right at the top there. And you've got Sagan, Ovechkin, Kane, and Marchand all rocking 2.9s. But through the HFI filter, no one better than David Krejci and Jamie Benn, both in 3.1 territory. And this is career best for him. We're talking about a guy that was, in Krejci, I mean, 1.8 2 years ago, David, and a 1.9 in 2008-2009. His best season through that filter. He's got 15 points in 10 games, 7 goals on only 29 shots. So I don't expect that type of pace to continue necessarily, but like we said earlier, the Boston Bruins power play has been fucking incredible, and he's right at the center of that first unit. 7 power play points already. Krejci just tearing it up. Also tearing it up, and another guy that wouldn't have been necessarily prioritized all that high by many at your draft, Blake Wheeler. The Winnipeg
Wheels.
Jets, a good story. Love watching what the Jets are doing. 14 points in 12 games, tied for fourth in the NHL as November comes around. 6 goals on 33 shots, 4 at even strength, 1 shorthanded. That's right. 6 goals, 4 at even strength, 1 shorthanded. That is impressive. His HFI up 5 consecutive years, David, from 2009-2010 all the way up to last year. And that is going from 1.0, which is not an option, to the 1.8 he climbed up to last year, which makes him a bona fide option. 2.3 this year through the HFI filter through 12 games. 26 goals in 79 games last year, David. Of those 26 goals, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
20 at even strength, 4 shorthanded, or only 2 on the power play. So of those 26 goals, man, 24 were of the tough variety. Of course, that drove the plus 26 that the dude put up last year. That is driving his value in a roto league and in a points league. John Carlson, Washington Capitals. This is a no-brainer. Everyone in the fantasy world knew John Carlson was going to have a monster year. The Washington Capitals were improved. And with Mike Green out of the picture, what was going to be in the way of Carlson having a career year? At this point, as November comes around, he's got the second best defenseman HFI, on par with Zdeno Chara. And I know that's going to sound strange, but this is a rate-based measure. So on a per-game basis, Chara has been ridiculous. Nearly a point-per-game player and a beast on special teams. So both of them putting up a number in the 2.2 territory. Props to you, Mr. John Carlson, sir. PK Subban, right there with a 2.1, hanging with those two guys. And then right below that peer group, we can talk about a group that includes Carlson, Klingberg, and of course Markov, a wonder, a marvel, if you will. But that's your group of 1.9s, Carlson, Klingberg, and Markov. But John Carlson back to him real quick, actually. I should have mentioned he's looking at 10 points in 10 games, a couple of goals and 20 shots, a plus four. He's got an HFI, David, that's up 3 years prior to this one already. So this is the meeting, if you will, of opportunity and development. This guy's had the trajectory, and now he's getting the opportunity and the responsibility. And what he's done is put up a 2.2 HFI, which is huge, league best at 25 years old. And he's getting paid $4 million against the cap. So if you're in a league like ours, that's just huge. That's a value. Some relatively young players, I suppose, we should talk about. McCann in Vancouver is going to stick with the club. Jared McCann, 5 goals in 9 games played on 16 shots, all of them coming at even strength, David. For those that don't know, a first rounder in 2014. Power play looks in his future for sure. Many of them at some point. Right now, fourth line center. I mean, the Canucks not so bad at center ice, David. Sedin, Sutter, Horvat, McCann on paper. That's a pretty good group. Horvat, a disappointing start for sure. Sutter sort of getting bounced around a bit. They tried him on right wing to start the season with the Sedins. Getting looks at center now with Verbata back up there. But on paper, that's a pretty good look at center ice for the Vancouver Canucks. Colton Parayko, 7 points in 11 games, Dave. 30 shots on goal. He's got a howitzer back there. He's a plus 7 already through 11 games. A couple of power play points. He's 22 years old. He's 6'4". I mean, this is a team that already has a ton of blue liners. He's got 4 goals, 2 game winners. You put him through the HFI filter, and he is the 9th best among defensemen in the league, rocking a 1.8. We want 1.4 from a defenseman, David, for inclusion on a winning roster. We expect 1.7 from a forward. He's rocking a 1.8.
Those are fantastic numbers.
That is ridiculous. Newhouse has him in our league. Fuck you, Newhouse. Colin Miller of the Boston Bruins, 2nd power play unit looks. For folks that follow the club, you probably know that, well, for folks that follow trades in the NHL closely, you might recall that he was involved in the Lucic trade. Getting around 14, 15 minutes on average. He played 14:50 versus Tampa Bay. There's talk of Boston maybe acquiring a blue liner. There's some chatter about Cam Fowler. So would that spell the end to a run with the big club for Miller? Perhaps. But right now, you're talking about a guy that's getting 2nd power play unit looks with Chara and having success. I believe he's got an assist in 3 consecutive games, David. And if you're in a cap league, he's getting paid next to nothing. Ride the wave of Miller and the Boston Bruins. Tyler Toffoli, you are a wonder.
Holy moly, Toffoli.
Holy moly, Toffoli. Well put. 9 goals in 10 games played. That is pretty ridiculous. On 26 shots on goal. So you'd have to think, though, I don't know, the 33% shooting percentage isn't going to maintain season long. But what a run for him. The LA Kings, of course, winning 7 in a row. 21 goals against for the Los Angeles Kings, David, in only 10 games. They've played 10, I shouldn't say in only 10 games. In 10 games played, they've only given up 21 goals. It's 2.1 on average. So the Kings are stingy right now. Jonathan Quick, the LA Kings racking up the wins, bringing all kinds of stingy.
Yep.
Okay, a bit of an update here on the Mark Dano file. He's already been recalled, David, and he's skating on the 3rd line at practice. It looks like he's skating with Kiro and Hartman after getting called up. There you go.
So are you saying pick him up if he's a fantasy option or no?
If he gets thrown up there with Hossa and Toews, for sure. I mean,
right.
I'm sure they're going to give him a look here, and if he's a fit, then you're off to the races with the Marco Dano file. So don't sleep on that one. Marco Dano recalled, getting looks in the 3rd line at practice, and it sounds like Marian Hossa may play Wednesday. So it may be sooner than later that Marco Dano gets an audition in the regular season on the top line. The Chicago Blackhawks. Some other notes before we wrap things up here. It sounds like Jaromir Jagr might be back real quickly. He skated Monday on the top line in practice. Yurii Talusti, the same deal. What was the other one I wanted to talk about? Oh, yeah, right. Brian Bickle sent down. So in all that Dano shuffle, Brian Bickle sent down to the AHL. And Artemi Panarin moves to a line with Jonathan Toews. That is a good deal.
Well,
for Neva,
if you're listening right now, go grab him.
Who is our producer here on the podcast.
She's
sounds like
birthday cake.
Great. Some other things going on. Andrej Palat has moved to the Stamkos line on Sunday. In Sunday's win over Carolina, he registered an assist in that context. So don't sleep on that. Of course, Vasilevskiy, Vas getting the big win. He is a beast, man. You want to talk about Ben Bishop and the Tampa Bay Lightning. One of the reasons I wasn't all that confident in protecting Bishop this year, Dave, was because, as I said last year, this guy's going to steal his job. Hey, Ben Bishop, it's Vasilevskiy calling. I'm here to take your job. And that process is back underway. It was put on hold for a while Vasilevskiy dealt with some issues, but back in action on Sunday and looking like a beast. And if you listen to some of the comments from the players, they felt that way as well, David. Thomas Fleischmann, we should probably talk about him in our league. I believe he's the highest pointing available player.
He was available up until about an hour ago.
Oh, you picked him up?
I did pick him up.
There you go.
And he's cheap as chips.
Cheap as chips. What?
As
they pump free, $750,000 or something like that?
Oh, something like that.
I guess that wraps it up for us, folks. Thanks for hanging with us for what has been about, I don't know, 40, 45 minutes or so. It's always a pleasure.
Have a great day.
To catch up with everyone in this room and, of course, with y'all. Enjoy the new NHL, Connor McDavid's NHL. I'm sorry, Sid, but it was good. That was a good time. That was then, and this is now. Enjoy it, Edmonton Oilers fans. You've got some good days ahead. Until next week, may your points be many.